Hey guys, welcome to episode 226 of the podcast with Hennessy. I wanted to just explain the reason why this is a little bit delayed. Not that anyone cares. Probably most of you weren't waking up in the morning perkily staring at your phone, wondering why the episode hadn't downloaded yet, like I did with Serial season one. But I spoke a little bit about my cousin Julian in this episode, and I wanted to just make sure to get Julian's okay. I didn't want to put any information out into the world and tell his story if he wasn't comfortable with it, but he was totally fine with it. So it just took me a little while to hear back from him, and we are putting this episode out today. I loved this episode. It's very long. I talked for a very long time with Hennessy. I want to thank Hennessy and anybody who thinks I talk too much on this episode for bearing with me. But that is a measure of true JV enthusiasm when I can't keep my mouth shut during an episode and let a guest get a word in edgewise. I recorded it in New York, and it is a companion piece, you could say, to Chemda's episode from the Keith and the Girl podcast. And as you know, we recently talked about her in an intro because she has been going through some medical stuff. And I just want to say she is a total warrior and an amazing person. So if you can give her support in any kind of way, emotional or otherwise, I strongly advise you to do that. If you're listening to this episode and you're a fan of Hennessy and Chemda's and you have not heard my episode with my cousin Julian, I think this would be a wonderful opportunity to listen to that. I bet you'll like it. I have a very aggressive husky who is pushing her face against me for getting petted right now. This is the sound of her collar jingling. Okay, so listen, that's what I wanted to put out there. Whitley, just let me get through this intro, please. A couple other things I wanted to let you know about. I want to thank everybody who gave their enthusiastic support of the announcement that Stand Against Evil got a second season. I'm so excited. For those of you who have been watching, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's going to be really, really fun. I want to thank, again, all the participants. We actually had a ton of people participate in the JV Gift Club. Thank you, Chris Royce and Tiana, for coming up with that. And I can't wait to hear, I want to hear from all of you about what books you got from your fellow janitors. I can't wait. I'm very excited about the ones I picked out for the person who's getting them from me. So can't wait. And I want to say anybody who has a last minute plan to come to LA, we still, I think, have a few tickets left for the Thrilling Adventure Hour show, the Work Juice show that we're doing at the Ace Hotel downtown on Saturday. I keep forgetting to tell people I'll be doing a Comic-Con in Portland, Oregon, on New Year's, right around then. And I think that's it. So please enjoy this episode. Sorry for the delay again, and I will talk to you guys soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I am already recording.
Oh my goodness.
It was just that fast.
All right.
It was just that fast.
Cool.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I enjoy your sweater very much.
Thank you.
Went straight into Christmas mode.
Yeah.
Oh, one's grumpy and one has a heart on.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, one stole the other one's,
and
two
turned
snowmen.
It into a penis. Okay.
And yeah.
That's
it's
great.
It's indicative of my life.
It's great. It's great. Because carrots, everybody.
Yeah. Carrots. I love them.
Fantastic.
They're my favorite. They're my
fantastic.
Favorite vegetable.
Okay. I'm going to give a tiny bit of history, although I don't think this will shock and surprise anybody who is a regular listener to the podcast, but this is a long anticipated episode for me only because I podcast your beautiful wife like nigh on a couple of years ago, maybe.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Yeah, still one of my favorite shows she's ever been on.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, I just listened to it again.
How's she doing?
She's doing great. She just recovered from an operation. She had a football-sized tumor between her heart and lung.
She did. And I talked about it a little bit on the podcast and threw the link out there
thank
for people.
You so
yeah,
much.
Yeah,
thank
yeah.
You.
Football-sized.
I really appreciate your help. Yeah. So that's
really.
Out. It's been about 2 months since her surgery, and she's doing really great.
And so it started, and I not to make you tell her story, but on the off chance that I don't get to see her, just because you guys are semi far away and I don't think she records tomorrow, And she
would, I mean, for you.
Yeah. We'll see if we can work it out. But I'm asking just in case.
Oh, please.
Because you're the closest thing to it story-wise right now. Mm-hmm. I didn't get into it in detail when I threw the link out there and told people that she was ill. But I sent everyone to the website.
The link had all the details.
Yeah. And it had, but now that you're here and you drop the football-sized tumor bomb. Mm. So she was. It started out that she was just having trouble breathing, right?
Yeah.
She was like, I wonder what's going on here.
She was wheezing a little bit, and we had been to the emergency room before. They gave her a nebulizer, and she felt better, so we went home. So 6 months later, she's wheezing again. She goes into the emergency room, and they do a chest scan and find it. And basically, her thymus, everyone has a thymus, and it's a little, it's kind of like a nodule that protects your organs while your bones are still forming. And by the time you're 18... it's like a breastplate, you know, mm-hmm. by the time you're 18, it kind of, retards mm-hmm. and just sort of shrivels away and like stops.
Mm-hmm.
But in one in a million people, it continues to grow and multiply cells. Wow. And so it just continued to grow. You know, she was 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, until she's like 40 now, and it just grew and grew and grew until this moment.
Fuck me.
She had no idea.
That is... Okay, now
nuts butts.
Let's just say this for a second. She is now the person that anybody, and I think many people are like this, think I don't want to overreact when I feel a certain way because the chances that it's something rare or the chances that it's something crazy or the chance, you know what I mean? Like, I know for me, whenever I have a symptom, the anxiety part of my brain wants to go into hypochondria, like wants to be like, mm-hmm. this is the beginning of the end. And then the part of me that has a panic disorder that's trying to combat the panic disorder is like, hey, it's never anything. Even if it's something, you'll deal with it, but it's probably not anything.
Yeah.
Now there you guys have been on the other side of like, well, you know what? It is big. It's literally big, and it's emotionally and figuratively big, and we're going to fucking deal with it. And you did deal with it.
You and I have so many similar neuroses, I feel. Like, mm-hmm. I identify with, you know, talking your subconscious down, like, a lot, you know? Or talking yourself, you know, you, the little you that's inside of you, whatever.
Exactly,
you know?
Right. Yep.
And I did that a lot, maybe. I try not to do it too much, you know, not to be like, oh, well, everything's going to be okay, because I wanted to be realistic.
Yeah.
But I did do a lot of research, and, you know, each time we got a piece of bad news, you know, it happened to be like the best of the worst news. So that's just what I tried to focus on, you know. And I also know that energy and vibrations and things are a real thing, and you can put things out that, you know, will help heal or that will hinder healing.
Right.
You know, so I was just trying to put out, you know, as much honest, positive hope as I could.
Yeah.
But the hardest part was definitely like the months in between the different pieces of news that we would get, you know, just like first it's a mass, then it's the size of a grapefruit, then it's the size of a this, then it's the size of a football, then she might have to get chemo and radiation, and then, like, oh, we won't know till after the surgery, and, like, then we can't do non-invasive surgery. We have to do open heart, you know, and, like, just, like, thing after thing after thing was torture. But I feel like, you know, the couple weeks we were in the hospital and then, like, the 8 weeks afterward at home were so easy compared to everything beforehand.
Yeah. Once you have a plan of action, even if it's a terrifying one, I would imagine that feels like a forward moving thing instead of a waiting, wondering thing.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because you're trying to live your life, you know, we're like going camping with buddies and we're, you know, there's this like looming, you know, tumor. over it.
Did you, and I have another question that I want to try. Hopefully, remember, I'm sticking on the back burner for a second. That pertains to you and the idea of kind of having that understanding of energy and positivity and that kind of thing. But I hope you don't mind that I'm just going there with all of this. Because I was very I've been thinking about it ever since I found out. It was really upsetting to me. Like, it's, and it's not, I'm not close to you guys. I don't know, you know, Hemda, other than like the experience that I had with her, but she really left an impression on me. And, you know, I wish you guys well. And
we are all,
you know,
too.
I feel we're like very connected. And yeah. And I, here. And so I just was like, listen, now I'm making about me, but I was really upset about it. And it just, I was crying about it. And I just thought you know, it's the whole thing of like, I just was really struggling with it. And, and my biggest thing is like, because I have such a relationship to like fear or panic or anxiety, like sort of understanding dread, I think is maybe my least favorite word. Like, I'd rather have fear or panic. The word dread implies that you are afraid, but you know the outcome and it's bad. Do you know what I'm saying? Dread is like, I know where this is going. How am I going to survive knowing that? And
it's
so that's my least favorite word. And so that is like what I it's not that I thought, oh, we're going to lose her or you're going to lose, or, you know, it was not like I thought it was going that way. It was, oh God, I don't want them to feel that. And I don't want them to feel fear because there are very few people I can think of in the world, even the worst people, where I would comfortably inject fear into them as like a tort. You know what I mean? I really have to think someone's a horrible human being to think they deserve to feel fear. That's just like something I really wouldn't want to put on anyone, you know?
Yeah.
So that I just kept thinking, like, I just don't want them to feel that. Like, because I felt that, whether I was supposed to because I had a real reason or whether I wasn't supposed to, it's just awful. So I just was feeling for you guys and just hoping that, because you had this, you know, community of support and because you love each other so much and all of those wonderful things being in place, that there was something pushing you past that. But also hoping, I think, too, like, well, when it's real, maybe it's not the same as when you're imagining it could be real.
Right.
I don't know. It's like this whole, speaking of conversations, you're like totally just going like 80 different directions.
Every possible outcome. Same here, you know, and it's not that I thought that we were going to lose her either, but that's always a possibility. And, like, you just, the realization of, you know, it's very cliche, but the, you know, humanity and, like, the frailty of us.
Our tissue, our bones,
And, you know, Joan Rivers died getting a facelift. Like, you know, anything could happen sort of thing. Yeah. And this is a one in a million. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, there were a lot of fears surrounding us. And maybe I didn't let myself slip into the dread for too long. But I definitely had contact with it. But I mean,
I wonder if we can't live in that place too long. Like, maybe that's the kind of upside of humanity, is like, maybe you can only sit in that place for a while, and then it's like, it's almost like you can't be nauseous for the rest of your life. Like, your body can't do it. Maybe there's just a part of your body and brain that's like, we lived in that for a little bit, we gotta check out of that for a while and sort of be numb or be hopeful or be this or be that.
Exactly. And I feel like I'm going to just sound cliche all over the place, but like, as artists, as though we can really indulge in that place sometimes, you know, in those kind of negative spaces. And it's super easy for us to go into that place of conflict, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I am aware of that. So a big part of my, you know, my other side is telling myself, you know, like, okay, you've had enough time here, like, time to go.
Yeah,
because you'll stay too long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's great, because that actually takes me back to the idea of understanding and sensing that there's a way of dealing with things that is perhaps more literally beneficial to the energy of your environment than to be kind of negative about it and feeling like you can see that impact. Is that something that has come to you as an adult, or is that something that you felt like you kind of always been aware of. Do you know what I mean? As much as a teenager can be aware of something like that. But
I've definitely always had a heightened frequency. I've had an awareness of, I guess, like people and timing and things, you know, and like an understanding beyond, even as a kid, you know, beyond other kids, of people and fuck, what was the question?
I think it was when you were like,
energy.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I feel like that's a part of it. You know, I'm just sensitive to energies and I've always have been. And, you know, I also can take other people's emotions and even personality traits upon myself, you know, from person to person. And it's like shape-shifting, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. I gotta really learn to hang on to myself, you know, not in acting. I don't become the role and forget myself.
I blacked out that whole shoot, but I did brilliant work. Job.
Yeah. Oh, that's so annoying to me. But
these guys know I have a lot of apologetic feelings about being an actor,
right?
So I like bury a lot of like, I really feel like I apologize, especially when I first moved to LA. I refused to acknowledge, and still, because absolutely. And when people, and like, I was like, there's too many things that could mean, there's too many versions of what a person saying that they're an actor are like, and like, that sucks because there's too many allowances, but instead of embracing that and supporting people who have the same dreams that I did, I sort of, you know, I think I was like, I very insistent on sort of like, whatever you think when I say that word, I want you to see me for me. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
There's something inherently like dismissive. Kid, exactly. You know? But there's something inherently judgmental and dismissive about saying, oh, no, I'm different. You know what I mean? So I struggle with that still, I think.
Yeah.
And I feel some shame about it on both sides. Like, I feel shame that I don't acknowledge it and embrace it. And I feel shame that I do, you know?
Yeah. Yep, me too.
And you always wanted to be, were you always a performer type?
Yeah, I was always a storyteller. And I was doing it before I knew it was a thing to do, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Did you...
I think it's part of being sort of an empath type person.
Where did
it's
you like, grow up, by the way?
I could have, you know, become a therapist, or mm-hmm. I could have done something, you know, but I'm really able to understand where people come from. And so I guess I channeled it into acting instead of mm-hmm. something else.
I feel the same way. Yeah. I feel the same way. Where were you?
Yeah, because
where
you're a fucking teen? Real actor. Because you're not an actor. You're mm-hmm. just a storyteller. Like,
I like the word storyteller very much.
Because mm-hmm.
that actually encompasses so much more. It's like you could be a journalist and be a storyteller. You can be an editor and be a storyteller. You could be, you know.
Yeah. And it's who you are and who you're born as, and you can tell in people's work, and you can tell in people, and that also sounds very cliche, but whatever, I'm going to apologize for everything. You're either born with it and it's a double-edged sword, or you know, you're not and you're an actor. You know what I mean? I don't know how else to put it.
I'm sorry, I'm asking you for the third time because I keep like asking you in the middle of something profound that you're saying. Where did you grow up?
Oh, I grew up in Hawaii.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I've forgotten.
I grew up in a real local Hawaiian town on Maui.
Do you get to my dad speaks German, but he has this very old, I mean, I can't emphasize enough that his Porsche is like a used Porsche from like the 90s that shares with his friend, because I don't come from like it, there's no money, so even being able to say my dad has a Porsche makes me laugh really hard, because it's like, say, you know what I mean, it just doesn't, those two things don't make any sense to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But he and his one of his best friends from college, who don't even live in the same city, co-own a used Porsche.
That's
that they
so rad.
Drive to each other. He's in Nevada, my dad will drive to Nevada, drop off the Porsche and fly home.
See,
it's adorable.
Guys need a reason to be intimate.
That's
they need a reason, like
an
sports
each other.
Or a car.
Yeah.
Or otherwise it's kind of gay.
Yeah.
Driving across the state and see someone isn't gay if it's for a car.
My dad's pretty cool about that. I'm trying to think, like, that also, because that's the other thing, is everything I just said could make my dad sound like the guy who wouldn't, like, cry and hold his friend in an embrace.
No.
But, like, he's very, he's a weirdo.
That is not what I get from that.
He's, like, he's funny because he's, in some ways, he's very masculine. In some ways, he's more, like, I have one of those situations where, like, my dad was more of a mother than my mom was kind of thing. So he's the one that, like, I would share a Kleenex box with watching Meryl Streep movies and stuff.
That's cool.
And he's a teacher and a writer, so he has, like, he's very artistic in that way. But
I think,
but
that's
at the same
so
time,
sweet.
He is the guy who shares, like, who drives and goes and, you know, shares his Porsche with
that's beautiful.
His buddy. Yeah, it's pretty great.
I would do that. I would do that.
It's good.
I could
it's
see
good,
myself
right?
doing that with my buddy Jesse. Like,
yeah. So,
like,
well, this
and then
is what
I'll
I was
get the
say.
Car and then I'll drive it to you and then you can have the car.
Yeah,
and, you know,
it's
we'll
great.
Drive back and
it's
forth
great.
The seat. That's how we'll see
it's
each other.
Really adorable. It for sure
I love
is adorable.
It.
I know. It makes me feel like, do I want to do that? I mean, not right now, but
yeah.
But anyway,
so busy. We'll get
that
a car.
Was the longest segue in the history of segues, but he. So okay, so he speaks. So he speaks German, but he calls it a Porsche. He's like, it's not Porsche. That's how German people say it because it's like there's a little drop off on the end.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Push.
But as an American, I don't say that. However, he says Hawaii because he spent a ton of time there. It's his favorite place in the world.
Good point.
And he pronounces it correctly. But that takes us into the, no, you're from there, so you really get to say it. You know how people like when I pronounce something right, quote unquote right, if I know how to, sometimes I'm shamed for that. And so then I drop back into like, oh, well, everyone says Hawaii. So I say Hawaii. And then if I'm not thinking about it, I'll say Hawaii because that's what my dad's always said. And that's what you hear people from Hawaii say. But people tease you. Do you know what I'm saying? Like
no,
if you say.
Hawaiis tease you, right? People not from Hawaii tease you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they're not from Hawaii.
Okay.
I know what you mean, though. It's like I live in Astoria.
And it's like if I'm at a Mexican restaurant and the person that is taking my order speaks, you could tell their English second language. Like I grew up speaking Spanish when I was first through sixth grade. I'll say taco. I won't say I'll have a taco.
Right.
But I probably would say that if a white person who says it back to me says, do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Speaking of being like a chameleon, right? You sort of go, well, I'm going to adapt to these circumstances. But then sometimes that makes me feel like, oh, maybe they're laughing at me because...
Or people will point it out. Like, yeah.
I'm saying arroz con pollo instead of saying like rice with chicken. But it's like, but I'm in the environment where I feel like it's appropriate for me to say that.
Yeah.
I guess I'm more insecure than I realized until right now. I would care that much.
Me too. Copy paste on that.
So you're from Hawaii. You're from a small community near Maui.
Yeah, on Maui.
On Maui, sorry. Yeah. Tell me everything.
Okay.
So tell me about your family size and why you were there.
I was born in Anaheim, California.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, I was there.
Beautiful
till I was about
cultural
seven.
Anaheim.
Yeah, beautiful cultural Anaheim. Disneyland. Mickey
absolutely.
Mouse.
100%.
Yeah, I remember I had a season pass. My mom got a season passes to Disneyland. And like, I memorized the park. It was
hell's
the best.
Yeah.
Then when I was about seven, we moved to Hawaii because there was a huge financial crash that started in the late 80s and kind of like went into the early 90s, you know. My dad was in Croatia at the time working on a computer game, basically, with his partner.
Mm.
And he was there for like 6 months. While everything was continued to crash, you know, my mom started sending out job resumes. I know this is the boring part, but I have ADD, so I have to like climb
a
ladder.
It's not boring. I'm already fascinated.
Oh,
Croatia
oh,
video great. Game. You had me.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Zagreb. So, my mom is sending out his resumes to every job in the LA Times posting, you know, and, like hundreds gotta be. And, you know, my dad is a minister and he had a church for a while. And the thing is that he's the kind of minister that doesn't like make money from it. You
right.
know, like he actually uses it to pay rent and to give to charities and things like that. And then whatever is left, you know, my mom works and she always has. And whatever's left, you know, he helps pay for the family.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't last, you know.
How did he get from video game to minister, or were those both things concurrent?
He's a nerd from way back. Like, he's like an OG nerd. Like, had the first computer. Was online before anyone was online. Mm. Like, I was in the first chat room when there were two chat rooms.
Do you watch Halt and Catch Fire?
No,
dude.
You're the second person to bring that up.
You gotta get on. I'm telling you.
Okay.
I love that show so much, and I'm not from that world at all. Maybe it wouldn't be as fun to be from that world, but it's really great because it's not. It's just like very. It's not cheeky about. You know what I mean? Like some stuff, and some stuff super fun to see in the late 70s, early 80s, early 90s, that's cheeky and kind of about that time period, but not unlike Stranger Things. It's set there, but it is like not concerned with the fact that it's set there. It's like, yeah, this is the context. We're not going to like be playing with a Rubik's Cube and have like a half hour be about the Rubik's Cube.
It's not a period piece.
Yeah. But obviously it's also impossible not to sort of have a wink at that when they're talking about, you know, Steve Jobs or whatever. And you sort of course, you're looking backwards as a person who has the information. So of course you're going to be like, oh, how cute. They don't think blah, blah, blah is going to go anywhere.
Right.
But at the same time, these are the pioneers.
They think 1 gigabyte is huge.
Yeah. But they are and the acting is great. But I would love for you to watch it.
Let
me know what you think.
Yeah,
and also the women roles are like great. And the second season, they're very, very central to the first season, but the second season really becomes about like, oh, by the way, the people who can keep it together and dream and run the show are the two female leads. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, obviously. it's accurate. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so old school and then ministry, Christian ministry.
Yep.
And is there a specific denomination?
Non-denominational.
Like, yeah.
Christian.
Siblings? You have siblings?
Yeah, I got three older brothers, and we grew up together. They're half-brothers, so they would run away a lot and, like, go to their moms in New Mexico, and then who just passed away, and then would come back to California, and she'd, like, it was strange. They were in and out of my life all through my childhood, which was, like, normal to me at the time, but my therapist thinks that it did more things than I thought. It might have. So
that's what happens to so many of us, right? And that's what happens a lot on this podcast too. Is I constantly return to this refrain of, "Isn't it amazing how normal is so different for people as young people? Like normal is normal. That's what you got, and then you don't know until you're in your 20s.
When you start talking about
not,
shit.
Yeah, what people are used to.
Yeah, people are like, what? And
were they?
Oh, the youngest one is 9 years older.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then the one is, and then 2 years older, and then 2 years older.
Okay. It's interesting that they, as a group, would sort of do that, yeah?
Yeah, their mom was, she's kind of a sick lady, you know, just sad and, you know, a depressive and not mentally healthy, and she would play a lot of mind games with them and make them, you know, she'd steal them in the middle of the night or make them leave the house or they would just run away, you know. She would tell a lot of lies to them about my dad. And I remember my brother setting up Trivial Pursuit for us, and when he got back from school we were gonna play Trivial Pursuit, and I was like, all right, you know, Jacob's gonna play with me, you know. And we sit down and we set it all up, and he goes to school, and like he never came back
because
he fucking left.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was planning that the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, he was?
Like, yeah, he had his bus ticket. I'm like, fuck, bro, you didn't have to go the extra mile.
Yeah, no kidding. That's really like, he really created that like thing that that I have a fascination about with the sort of like abandoned ghost towns and stuff, which there aren't very many of anymore, but that idea of like that you just get up and leave, and how surreal it is when something like that is so unfinished.
Yeah.
And I didn't know you were going to say, like, and he was planning that. That's
sick, right?
They're
all fucked up.
It's definitely a detailed decision. Like, this will make it seem even more like I'm not about to do what I'm going to do. It's
exactly.
Very mature. It's very like,
and you're a little kid and it won't, you know, like probably won't, you know, affect you or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it was a good decoy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like
thumbs
sitting
up
there.
Thumbs up.
Sitting there at the board game, like just looking at the clock, waiting for
sort of almost like you'll touch a pie piece for, oh, no, we're not playing yet.
No,
it's
no,
any
no,
minute
no.
now. He's going to be able to handle that pie piece. And that was the one that was the closest to you in age, or was
Yeah.
Oh boy.
He was like my best friend and my
looked up to
nemesis.
And, oh yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah. Did they end up in Hawaii at all, or did all of that take place before that move? Because that's obviously a long way to go to be back and forth.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the youngest one came with us to Hawaii.
Okay.
And my dad got a job there because the only person to respond to his, you know, inquiries or whatever was this dude that he had worked with in the 80s. My dad opened up the first 24-hour crisis hotline in America.
Oh, wow.
With this guy and a couple other people from the hotline they were working at.
That's something.
Yeah, pretty cool.
That's again, another thing where you go, somebody had to be the first. Somebody had to say, hey, why isn't there something somebody can always reach out to in a crisis?
Yeah, yeah. I have a lot of pioneers in
fantastic.
My family.
I wish I thought that way. I really don't feel like I feel like I'm...
yeah,
I
have a lot of dreams.
But I'm just, I don't feel I'm an inventor. Do you know what I mean?
I am such an inventor. That's the thing.
Good for you.
I am such an inventor.
I think that's so great. I admire that.
I'm always inventing shit that's already been invented, or I'll invent it and I will never do anything about it.
Yeah.
But I have a couple ideas now.
That's great.
I'm not going to tell them
yeah,
to
don't
you guys.
You even say
But I'm never going to do anything about it. And it's just going to happen. That's
maybe
the thing.
One day. You never know.
Maybe.
Could be
maybe.
Like there's a tipping point where there's one idea where you're like, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one I can't sit on anymore.
Yeah.
And it's that perfect storm where I bothered to do the research and I think I might actually be.
Oh my God. See, now I'm getting anxiety. I'm like,
also
I have
no
so
pressure.
Many things to do.
Also no pressure as a non-inventor. No pressure whatsoever.
I'll keep you updated.
Yeah. So how was moving there? Because that's, I'm listening to this podcast right now called Offshore, and it's a podcast sort of about the voices and news of Hawaii. And,
oh, I gotta check that out,
it's,
too.
It's really interesting. It's the first one. Now, I think I've mentioned
Aloha.
This before.
Welcome to Offshore
but
Podcast.
Here's the problem. It's a girl who's not from there who moved there. Oh, boy. Hennessy, I could talk to you all day long. I really am getting so sparked about all these different things. I have to push past her vote for voice, and I'm sure that's true. There are probably people who have listened to my podcast who have been like, I can't stand her voice. I'm not going to listen to it, and that's not something we can
They're
change your control.
They're stupid, and they hate women because you have a beautiful voice.
Bless you.
Yeah. No, some people do have an annoying voice. No, but
it's,
I like listening
tough.
To your voice.
Well, that's the interesting thing about journalists who are journalists first who get into podcasting, because I love podcasts. And they're and I do think that it is I think that there is this whole vocal fry thing, all of that kind of stuff. I've talked about on the podcast before. I really struggle with it because
In the younger generation.
And I struggle with it because I want to be that person who pushes past all that. And I listened to all the episodes, and I think she's saying really interesting, important things. I'm going to do an impression, which also adds to me being disrespectful for her. She sort of and I'll never be the person. It's a free podcast. I'm never going to be the person who writes her and says, hey, thanks for your free podcast. I find it really interesting. Change your voice. Like, I would never do that because it would crush me if someone did that to me.
It's okay.
But it's like, it's this sort of thing. Let me see if I can get there. Because the first few couple like minutes, I think to myself, this might be the episode where I can't get through it and I'm going to have to read a transcript.
Oh, yeah.
It's this kind of thing. It's like, and he was in prison for 5 years. And that is what Hawaii is dealing with. It's really hard to be Hawaiian because there is so much racism in Hawaii. There's something about that's like, oh, no, I know what you're saying is important.
She moved there recently?
I think you find out in one of the first episodes that she's a recent transplant.
Okay.
I don't know what color her skin is. But it's interesting because she's talking to a lot of natives, and she's talking about really interesting stuff because she's the first thing they did this first season was focusing on a very controversial case of a special agent, like a Haole special agent who I think was on leave in Hawaii visiting friends who live there who were also military based, and he had been up, you know, he flew from the East Coast, didn't sleep, then went out that night, so he'd been up almost 24 hours. He'd been drinking, but the people on his side of the fence say that he only had a couple beers over a few hours. And then a native man He had an altercation with him in a McDonald's. Mm. Things got really heated. The guy started beating him up, and he shot him and killed him. But
he shot the Hawaiian.
He shot the Hawaiian and killed him.
Oh,
and
boy.
Then immediately tried to save him. Like, immediately flipped it around and was trying to keep him alive.
Shit.
And he's been tried twice. He was tried and had a hung jury. Then he was tried and found not guilty for murder, but a hung jury. At the very last minute, the judge introduced the idea of like reckless manslaughter. And was a hung jury for that. So now they're trying to try him. And it's been years now. They're trying to try him for reckless manslaughter. Like, he didn't mean to murder him, but he did something reckless with a weapon and he died. And so this has been a huge dividing thing in Hawaii, particularly because there's an older case of a Hawaiian man who was murdered because a woman was raped. I feel like I'm doing all the talking on this podcast. God damn it.
No.
But this is just like, if we were hanging out, this is what would happen. I'd be like, dude, I have to tell you this story about Hawaii.
I love this.
It was a really old case where, I think it was like in the 20s or 30s, a rich white couple in Hawaii, she gets accosted and may or may not have been raped and says it was a group of native men when it turned out to be a white man. But like, that's, you find that out way, way later.
I mean,
and her husband and a group of his friends murdered a guy that she had said was the person who did it, which he didn't do. So, and then that guy got off scot-free.
I remember
went
that.
Back to the Navy. It's a huge, painful thing that that whole community has dealt with, and so that has been dragged back out, unsurprisingly, because it's like, here we go again, this non-native white guy kills a native and he's getting off scot-free, and it's because, you know, this is the racist tension that exists, or the racial tension that exists in Hawaii. So she kind of, but what's cool about it is she goes
in America,
and they go a lot into the fact that Hawaii is interesting because it's one of the only places in the United States where whites are a minority, or at least everyone's kind of around the same amount of people. And so they experience racism the way most people who aren't white experience racism on the mainland. And so there's a sort of like bemused comment of like, you know, they're really not getting treated any differently than anybody who's not white in America, which is to say, there might just be a slur that's tossed. It's not necessarily that you are going to be lynched or anything like that, but that it's just like, you're different. So we tease you, or we make jokes, or we say all whites are like this, and we don't really think that, but like, that's just something culturally that we say. And that, Howleys get so upset about it because they've never experienced that. Whereas every other race is like, welcome to the party. Like, this is just what it's like to not be a white person in America.
Just send all the white people to Hawaii for a week.
So I would love to hear your take on that.
Not all at once.
I would love to hear your take on that. Because, of course, when people go to Hawaii, they sort of experience it as like, it's a cultural melting pot. And, look at everyone living in harmony together. And look at this beautiful Pacific Island culture that we, you know, killed and overthrew this, you know, the king and queen of Hawaii. So for your experience moving there as a child and then being and kind of a minority, how was that? Like, what was your experience of Hawaii?
I was definitely a minority in the town I grew up. I was the only white kid at my school. And the thing, it is a melting pot of, like, Asian people, you know.
Because you have a, like, Chinese, Japanese.
Yeah, Chinese,
Pacific
Japanese,
Islander,
Hawaiian, Samoan, Tongan, Filipino, you know, all the kind of Pacific Rim imports. And so lots of different cultures, lots of awesome food. And watch, like, I can hear my pigeon coming out already.
Bring it.
Fuck.
Bring it.
I took voice and speech for years. had no idea I had an accent when I came here. But everyone thinks I'm from the Midwest.
Really?
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, are you
people
from
think
the
I'm from the Midwest too. I'm from Arizona. I don't know why. When people are from the Midwest, I don't know it unless they're from Chicago.
Right. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah, exactly. Unless they sound like they're from Michigan.
Exactly.
The fuck were we talking about?
In your school and stuff.
So I went to Kihei Elementary School and I was the only white kid and I definitely was, the minority, and sure, kids are cruel. I
Also, did you already know that you were quote unquote different in other ways? I mean, did you have, in terms of your gender identity, did you feel like, I don't know if, because when you're little, you don't know, again, you don't know what's normal. You don't know, you sort of see what you see, but you don't know how kids are internalizing what they're doing or experiencing.
I felt like I was dealt the wrong cards. I felt like, fuck, man, just why couldn't I have been born a boy?
And you knew that pretty early on.
Early on.
Because my cousin, my brother, he's, by the way, he's just had his surgery. So
which one?
He's packing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, in San Francisco.
I want a dick pic.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure I can get you one. I've seen it.
Oh, you're getting one from me.
All of you are getting
one from me. I'm posting it up online.
Yeah, it's been
tagging Janet Varney.
I'll take it. No, okay. He's recovering now, and it's been tough. You know, it's an incredibly intense operation.
Where was his?
In San Francisco.
Cool.
But yeah, it's definitely like it. Ugh, I'm sure he wouldn't mind if I shared this, but Teresa, his wife, took a video of it. The doctor, after Julian came out of surgery, of course, my aunt wanted to know that he was okay and stuff. And so she took a video of it, but he said what they had asked him to say to her, which was, hi, Mary, it's doctor. I forgot his name. I have good news. It's a boy. So cute. It was like,
that's so sweet.
It just felt for him like it completed something. Like,
nice.
That's the words that should have been said when he was born.
That's really
for him.
Beautiful.
And so, it was really moving.
He should
do
a one person show and call it It's a Boy.
I know, right?
Ugh.
Yeah. So, very, very
maybe
cool.
I'll do it.
Very cool. But yeah, I'm trying to remember if he, I have to, like, we talked about it and then I've just sort of forgotten, but I can't remember if he felt. Like, I feel like I really pressed him and said, like, did you feel the absence of a penis or did you know something? Did you feel something wasn't right? And I can't remember if and when he really was able to articulate to himself, like, there's something off, you know?
I mean, I always felt my penis. So that was difficult for me growing up because I thought it was going to grow in. So yeah. I was waiting for it to grow in because I have phantom limb syndrome in my junk area, and I don't know. So basically, I've done some research on that and been in forums and other things with people that live with phantom limb syndrome. And it's basically, you know, you feel your limb, even though it's not there. And I always felt my dick and balls and, like, you know, always, like, knew where it was. I have, like, series of, oh, yeah, moments, like, that never kind of go away, you know? Like, I pull up my underwear and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I go to adjust and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I look in the mirror. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, just kind of things that I've learned to live with.
Have you had, because, and I hope everyone has realized this by now, but this idea of, like, all transgender people feel the same, like, they all feel the same or they all, you know, which is wildly not true. Have you had conversations with trans folks who have phantom limb envy, who are like, I wish I felt my dick and balls the way you do. Like, that's so much more visceral than the way I've experienced it. Or
I have met other trans dudes that were also born with the same thing as me.
Like, but have you
both
had
have
someone,
that mapping in the brain? I haven't had anyone with phantom
penis
envy.
Because I don't know. I don't know. But I just wonder again. I'm taking because I feel like I'm fairly empathetic. Also, I've had, like, wonderful dreams where I've had a penis, and I don't wake up going, Freud was right! I wish I had a penis because I wish I had the power of a man. Whoa. Like, where
all my
it's
dreams
like,
have a dick.
I think that's another thing where I would wonder if... So I just wonder if somebody who doesn't have that would think, what a gift.
I'm going to have weird dreams tonight.
No, but, like, do you know what I'm saying? I just wonder, yeah. I wonder if that's out there, is that somebody who hasn't had that experience and feels like... that is that somehow you are closer to having the experience than somebody who doesn't experience that. Whereas, like, I'm sure there's tremendous downsides to it also, if not all down, you know, it's just all, it's all so different to me, but I'm so curious and fascinated by it, as I'm sure many people are if they're not.
Yeah. I mean, no one's told me that they've, you know, wished they had that also that I've shared that with. But I've definitely struggled with it being,
I mean, that seems like to me
a
it would
huge
be
frustration,
like, yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, to now I think I'm more grateful for it now.
because I understand it more. And, you know, some people actually have phantom limb syndrome in their dick and balls who are not trans, too, because it's a mapping in your brain. You know, it just that for that area is developed. And yet, you know, the thing is, our genitals are not so different from males and females. Either the two sacs drop and become balls, or they stay up there and they remain ovaries.
Yeah.
You know, and either, you know, it grows into a penis, you know, with foreskin, or it remains kind of a clit with a hood.
Yeah.
You know, it's all
very
similar.
I think that's a great thing. Do you feel like that's something that gets communicated to... Because that's such a nice simplification. I mean, it's not a simplification, but it's like it's a truth. But I mean, it's like that's a nice way of all the different ways that one has to address this kind of stuff with someone who has no understanding of it, or is afraid of it, or thinks they hate it, or whatever.
I've to sort come of go, from Let's, all of those yeah, places yeah, yeah, is the
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
So I need to reconcile to myself what this is. I need proof for myself, you know, because. You feel crazy sometimes, you know, like, what the fuck? How could this even, like, you know, be a thing, you know? But you've got this spectrum of, okay, so like I've learned in the first half of pregnancy, your body is formed. Your genitals, you know, your fingers and toes and your, you know, whatever, your physical traits. And in the second half of pregnancy, that's when you're, endocrine system is formed, which basically forms your personality, your gender, your traits, you know, your nervous system and everything like that, you know, kind of connects everything together. So the body is formed before the person, really, you know, and it boils down to a surge of testosterone in the womb, okay, makes a male brain or a female brain or something in the middle. Usually there's a bigger surge after the sacs drop into balls.
Mm-hmm.
But mine, you know, stayed up there and had this, you know, similar surge. Now there's something in the middle called intersexed, okay? We've got transgender, which is, you know, I got more testosterone to where I was developed as a male. Even though I'm female sexed, right? And mm-hmm. female bodied, okay. Then you have, so that's trans, because it's trans, it's like a transformer, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. from male to female, or female, you know, to male, sort of. Your gender's different from your sex. All right. So then you have intersexed, which, did you know that there are more recorded cases of intersexed people than there are Jews?
In the
world?
I didn't know that. Yeah.
My co-host, Judy Gold, would be like, that's because they killed us all! Which is probably true and an unfortunate fact, but still a fact. Now, intersex just means that your genitals don't match a cisgender, which is the next thing. So there's trans, intersexed, cis, which basically... you're a cisgender woman, you were born a woman, you look like what we classify a woman, okay? Intersex is anything in between. Mm-hmm. So maybe one thing stays an ovary and one drops into a ball. Maybe you have, you know, you're born with one ball, maybe you're born with a mound and a vagina. Maybe you're born with a vagina and balls, or a dick and ovaries, or any variation of the sort.
Yeah.
That is intersex. And that happens far way more often than we even realize now.
Well, yeah, because that's a situation where decisions get made.
Yeah,
right?
For you. They give yeah. them for
your parents
you as a
are
baby.
They, somebody comes to a parent and says, like, all right, here's what we're dealing with.
And then
which
later
one do you
on,
want?
Exactly. But
which
later,
is a terrible decision for parents to make. I mean, no parent plans to go, I guess I'll make it a boy.
Well, they shouldn't. That you know? Shouldn't be their yeah. decision to make, you yeah. know.
Well, but, that's, yeah, it's just a product of, I was just thinking about this before you came over. I was going back to thinking about, you know, which is something that comes up a lot just because it's a big focus in my life because of my family, but just that idea of like, and this is the other thing I was gonna say about you being empathetic is what a gift to you to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes when it comes to somebody who is unwilling to or unable to accept stuff. It's like,
It's
I would rather feel like I could see why someone would think that than to just turn around and hate right back. Do you know what I mean? It feels better for me to go, well, this is the community you grew up in. These are the parents you had. This is what scares you. This is why you don't understand why this doesn't hurt you. I got to, you know, how can I get in there instead of just being like, I want to push you off a building.
Right.
Which also I have the impulse to do sometimes, you know, but it's like how, and so I think, because Julian's very empathetic too. And so he really comes from this place of like, I'm not angry. I don't expect everybody to suddenly go, sounds good, everybody, you know, like sounds great. Like I understand that this is a process and I understand that for me, I don't feel, you know, I would rather get at it in this way than come at it from an angry place or what have you. But
sure. And that's why I learned, you know, kind of what transgender is on a cellular level, you know, because I just feel like when you can break it down into a tangible, you know, like how does this actually happen?
Yeah, exactly right. And it's like
a medical.
Are you going to go someone has Down syndrome, someone has a panic disorder, someone has, I mean, some of that's environmental, some of it's not, but like there are very specific things that happen
someone
to your
has
chromosomes.
A mole.
That's
someone
absolutely
has an extra toe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, I used to think of it as a deformity, but really, you know, I just think where we're at in society, in our modern society in America, you know, it's you can't live a normal life unless you're a cisgender person.
When did you knew from being a child that you could be, because you felt the presence of genitals that you could not look down and see? When did you start to have your mind open to the idea that this was something could be talked about or could be, you would meet somebody who also felt that way? Like how much of that came out of you into the world and when?
Well, when I was little, like I used to talk about, you know, when I'm a big boy, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And everyone, you know, thought it was cute. So they, you know,
super
nobody
tomboy.
Corrected me.
Sort of, whatever that means.
I mean, I was a boy, but people thought I was
a
tomboy.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's so, how people would have classified you.
Yeah, and I loved that because it had boy in it, right?
Yeah,
it
was absolutely.
Closest
you can get.
A boy. And but I knew I felt embarrassed when they would put me in the girls' line at school, and I didn't really understand why. My buddy Michael, I remember, who's dead now, but Michael Slagle, my boy, he taught me how to pee standing up for when it did grow in. And it was around the time I was 6 or 7 when I realized that that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And then we upped and moved to Maui, right? But that empathy that you were talking about of understanding where people are coming from, like, I definitely understand. Oh, that helped me get through being the only white kid, too, in Hawaii. Because the thing is, like, it's not just an unfounded racism based on a minority majority thing. The Hawaiians are not like that. It is a historical, I am a visual representation of a people that overtook their land and without, you know, their permission and against their will.
How would we
made
feel?
Them into a,
how would we feel if somebody who looked different from us, never mind if they do or don't, but like, let's pretend for a second that they also look different from us. Not only are they coming in and changing everything about our lives, but they also happen to not look like us. How is that not going to affect you emotionally? And how is that not going to ingrain itself in
and
some
you
way?
You see people just coming and taking advantage of your resources and not really being sensitive to, you know, the culture, the people, which is so important to the Hawaiian people, you know, is the culture. And like the Hawaiians, like we, you know, they will grow up with a sunset, like an incredible sunset their whole lives, but they will always look at it their whole lives and understand how lucky they are to, you know what I mean, like they value the land and each other. And it's like, you know, it's still very much a tribal feeling there, which I, you know, was not a part of, you know, and I am a foreigner in this land. You know, so there was that, like, I'm the only white kid in school. So there was that, but it was also trickling down from their parents, you
sure,
know,
sure.
And their parents' parents and their parents' parents who got, you know, got kicked out of their position in their homes, you know, and in their land. So I think knowing that made me understand where the hostility came from. I could understand why people wanted to fight me.
Because it's hard, because we all do this, right? I mean, anybody who is a, that's the whole white guilt thing, right? It's like if you're a white liberal in America or whatever, this, but there's this, there's this thing that keeps recurring where people are like, but it's not my fault. I can't change it. I didn't keep slaves. I'm here now.
Never had,
you know,
that.
What I'm saying? But yeah. Like, and so that's the struggle that I think people bump up against. It's the struggle that white men who are liberal in America struggle with, which is like, please don't say I voted for Donald Trump just because I look like I look. You know, these sort of ideas of like people feeling frustrated on the other side, and do you address that? And I think you addressed it beautifully, which is to say like, You, I understand all of that. We still have our, like, we just have to be compassionate because we can't change the cultural climate that we live in. And it just wasn't long enough ago that you get to, you know, bump up against someone else's chest and go like, this isn't my fault.
Oh, absolutely. No. We got to be able to listen to each other and not take it personally if someone is yelling at us, because that yelling is not necessarily a personal thing. It's coming from, you know, years and years and years and decades of oppression, and you know, and your DNA is memory, and it's like, let's just listen to each other. Yeah. You know, I think that's just, that could solve a lot of problems.
As I'm gonna get micro for a second, as the only white kid at your school, did that remain true in high school, or did that open up a little bit?
Well, you know, I mean, I was supposed to go to Maui High, which was, I would have also been the only white kid there probably, or just one of a few.
Yeah.
And it was a rough school. It was kind of, you know, it was a rough school.
Yeah.
The schools I'd been going to, the middle school and the elementary school I'd been going to. But, you know, like now there's hormones involved, and I was not looking forward to that. So I got a geographic exception to go to Baldwin High School, which was very much it wasn't, you know, but it was a theater school, you know, it had a really incredible program. And I actually got really involved in my canoe club, in a Hawaiian canoe team, Kihei Canoe Club, actually, before this. And I was paddling a lot. I was dancing hula and speaking Hawaiian and, like, really immersed myself in, you know, the culture of Hawaii and everything. And this took me out of all of that and just, like, you know, put me straight into just, like, doing theater all the time, you know, all the time, like, in between classes, after school, whatever, you know. It's like I was always busy, and it was so great, you know, and I had so much diversity around me that I wasn't used to, you know. And there were like white people, and there were Asian people, and I think there was a black person. And it was like a breath of fresh air. And I met some of my best friends even now to this day, you know, there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was great for me, you know. And I always, you know, would come back to the Hawaiian culture, and I don't, you know, it's really like shaped and grown me, and also made me, given me, I think, a white guilt, if you want to call it, mm-hmm. that's very different from the white people on the mainland that I've met. Like, it's, I don't identify with white people here, and I don't feel like I can talk about growing up a minority here. Because I'm white, you know, I don't look forward to being a straight white male. Like, that is not a choice that I would make.
Yeah.
I think that women are far more evolved. They've had to evolve, further than men.
I really need you to meet Julian. I feel like you guys are going to be two peas in a pod.
Oh yeah. I would love to meet him.
Like, it's so funny because I've had people say...
He doesn't live here, does he?
No, he lives in Arizona.
Okay. Okay.
But just the idea of like... You know, I've had people say, like, and it's a legitimate question, like, hey, so your cousin who, by virtue of having to have some community that he felt slightly more at home than a cis, you know, than a normal community, however you want to look at it, being a lesbian and being part of a gay community, well, now he could just be, they could be just a straight white couple, right? You know, I mean, she's not 100% white, but anyway, that, you know, he could, like, they could just be... in that, like, that could be their story or whatever, if you want, and like, that's just not who, you know, their community is trans. But it's that's all very interesting too. And again, it's like, okay, now you're a straight white male.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what does that mean? You know, and it doesn't have to mean anything more than anything else means anything. That's well, it just means a label. A lot to but. Me.
It means that I have a huge, I think I have a big responsibility, appearing as such, to, you know, as I continue on with hormone therapy, as I, you know, look more like a cis male. Right now, you know, people just think I'm a lesbian, probably. I feel a need to be a positive ally,
mm-hmm.
and a public, like, to speak out for queer people and women, and just to be a visual ally of, you know, a majoritized,
mm-hmm.
Majority.
Yeah. No. That totally makes sense.
that very much is really like fighting back, you know, against our evolution, you know, mm-hmm. even though they don't realize it is not malicious. I don't think, you know,
yeah.
I don't think that men are bad. I think that, you know, our society is just learning, you know, what is real and is not.
If you are a person who hasn't had to, I get it. I mean, that's, again, this the whole Trump thing. I'm not going to, like, already, I can't believe how little I've been able to talk about your high school years. Thank God we've stuck some of it in there. But I can't already, I'm already telling you, like, people have started to get, as the years have gone by, more and more vocal about when they're dissatisfied that not enough has been said. And they're like, we need a second episode. So just prepare to put that on the books. But the whole Trump thing, like, again, This American Life, I think they did a great job of talking to people. And I think they really made an effort to say, we are going to actively, particularly Zoe Chace, I've talked about her before. I think she's a great reporter, is clearly an empath, is clearly a people person, is clearly very curious about people in a sort of like, how do I help us all understand each other kind of way? Which I guess is its own kind of bias, but like, it's a bias I strongly approve of. But going out to these places where she's actively seeking out people who are voting for Trump, who clearly did, and trying to understand it and trying to put it in a way that hopefully liberal people, because I'm sure they know that that's who listens to their podcast, can understand. And there's a one, I think I've talked about this before, but I'm just telling you because I want you to know that there's this one thing where she's talking to this community of people. I think it might have been Michigan or someplace close by, Minnesota maybe, where these like really nice middle class to lower middle class, maybe even white communities are, all these Somalians are coming in and they feel like their way of life is being drastically affected and drastically altered by these Somalian refugees who have come in and are making communities in their town.
Let them make you food.
And that's, I mean,
just let them make,
yeah,
you food.
And that, like, this congressman, like, this guy came in who, bless his heart, I think he was even Republican, and he just like lost his shit and was like, what I hear you telling me is that you want to ban people who are different from you from coming in for a while, and I'm gonna tell you right now, that's not what America was built on, and that's not what's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. But it really gave him pause because he was like, I know these people, I know these constituents, and they are good people. But they're real uncomfortable. And so,
yeah.
I talked about this on the podcast before, but I started trying to imagine, like, what would it be like if a completely culturally different group came into my neighborhood, started playing music loud because they play music loud. That's just different from me. Or, you know, uprooted all the trees because culturally for them, they don't like trees. And so that's all concrete or whatever it feels right to that community. I would be really unhappy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to think I'm that person. I want to be like, listen, every person, let's all live together in harmony. But like, when I think about my, and so that's really where I've had to go with it, is like, if people feel what makes them feel comfortable, safe, happy, it doesn't mean that they need to have a gun under their pillow, or maybe it does. It doesn't mean that they don't, because that family consistently, or that group of people consistently said, this woman was like, I don't feel like, I don't, it's not that I don't like black people. I promise you, it's not racist.
It's just uncomfortable.
It's just culturally, they just feel, you know, and so
we're still human, like, okay. You know, and yeah. We're still like so close to our, like, we have a need to be tribal, you know, to be safe. We've got this animal urge to stick to things that are like us, right? Like, I'm very blessed, I feel, because, okay, so even though I was, you know, a little trans kid growing up, that was really put on the back burner because of me being the only white kid, really. Yeah. Like, that was my major sort of vault or thing to get around.
Certainly, it's the most immediate and external, right? It's like, that's undeniable.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm fortunate in a lot of ways because I don't have that. Well, I feel real uncomfortable around a lot of white people, to be honest. Like, if I'm just, I'm in a room full of white, which happens a lot. It was crazy being the majority for the first time, like, consistently. It feels very unnatural to me. I feel like I can't trust anyone there. It's weird.
I'm uncomfortable with having grown more comfortable with it, because I think it's so important, because that we're talking about children. I mean, that's why I think magnet schools are so important. That's why I think public schooling is so important, because I love the idea, like, I understand the idea of privatized education, but I can't get to the place in my head where I feel like everyone's going to provide for everyone who doesn't look like them.
Right.
And so, but I feel like it's vitally important for kids to all go to school together. I just feel like, because I wouldn't be the person I am if I hadn't been in such a melting pot or at least one where I was not surrounded by kids who look like me. I just know that was important, even in ways I wouldn't have been able to articulate then and maybe can't now. I just know it was important.
I agree. I agree. You're a citizen of the world.
And it's when you're a kid that stuff gets ingrained.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot ingrained. I'm sorry for everything always.
I know.
The way to feel safe, I feel like when that starts to happen, when you start to be introduced to people that you don't understand and that you may disagree with, I feel like the only way to really feel safe in that situation is to, like, put yourself in a very unsafe feeling mode and be the bigger man, so to speak, and just introduce yourself, you know, introduce yourself, bring a piece of your culture to them, invite them into your circle. You know, you don't have to have much a house every day, but I feel as though, like, hey, I know, you know, it's like turning the other cheek, so to speak, you know, if you want to talk, you know, in Christian lingo. I feel as though, you know, they're pumping their loud Somalian music over here. Go over there and be like, you know what? The music is a little loud and we have to sleep, but I really love it. Would you mind, like, making me a mixtape?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just inviting, just drawing a circle around them, you know what I mean, to include them. And that's what I've tried to do with people that try to draw a circle to keep me out.
Yeah.
You just draw a circle around them to keep them. It's like the love and just empathy, you know, and trying to understand others is really the only way to fight all of this ridiculous, you know, quote, power and, you know, Trumpiness and, I mean, it's the only way to fight the powers that be that want us to be against each other.
Yeah.
You know, it makes us weaker.
And it's like,
when we can love each other, it makes us stronger.
It's hard to love your enemy, but to me, for me personally, it's even harder to hate them. Like, that's just for me. Emotionally, my body cannot take that much anger. And I know I have the capacity for it, but I also know that either way, it's hard. Either way, it's hard. For me, it is harder to be pissed. It just is. And sometimes maybe I need to be more angry than I can get. Or sometimes I need to stay angry to move something forward. And that's maybe that's something I need to work on. But, like, at the end of the day, ultimately, I feel like if I'm going to have to do some work, which clearly I am, to become better or to be feel safe or to meet or to, you know, or to help heal and all that kind of shit. That for me, it is, it's just harder. It may be easier initially to be angry, but it is fucking hard to stay in that place. Like, if I feel like it shrivels up my insides.
Definitely.
To the cellular level.
Oh, absolutely. It's like carrying a bucket of poison around that just keeps splashing on you.
Yeah. Did you, I got to get into this MASH game. I could talk to you about it. But let me ask you, let me use this as a segue. But, so in terms of feelings that you had about having crushes on people and stuff, you're, one of the only white kids around, period. For a while, you're the only white kid at your school. Who did you have crushes on?
Was it just, I was in love with one person,
yeah,
and she was my buddy,
yeah,
and she actually graduated a year before me, but I had done shows with her, you know, throughout, and she went to the same school I did. Her name was Leah Krieg. She is still to this day one of the most talented people I've ever met. Incredible singer, incredible actor. We're still great friends, and she's my sister. She sang me and my wife Hamda down the aisle at our wedding, and she was the only one for me. I felt as though she was a safe person, someone I could really like,
I just want to make sure,
crush on and focus all my teenage, you know, angst and hormones on, that I wasn't really allowed to have or show or experience. I could, you know, kind of just focus them on her and kind of just, you know, in my diary or whatever the fuck journal, make sure it's a journal. Guys keep journals. It was Lisa Frank with a lock on it, but it was a journal.
It was a goddamn journal. The word diary sounds like diarrhea to me, so it's actually for a different reason that I don't like it.
I always felt that. Every time I say diary, I hear splat.
That's right.
So she was so cool, and I just felt like if she ever found out, she wouldn't stop being my friend. And, you know, she was extremely talented, and I'm attracted to talent and talented people, and just beautiful. She's beautiful. Like, she is. She's gorgeous. She was an easy person to be able to kind of focus my energy on.
What about
and I knew she wouldn't,
yeah,
disappear, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. What about just total fantasy world, like watching movies and television shows? Like, did you have the people that really jumped out at you that you're like, that's my jam?
Yeah. Okay, so Deanna Troi from Star Trek.
Yeah, sure.
I was in love with her. Becky from Roseanne.
I see a little Hemda and Deanna Troi.
Are you kidding me? They're fucking they're identical twins.
Good job, you.
I'm like,
how did
I promise?
I made my dream come true. How did this happen?
Yeah, right.
That's great.
I'm a Deanna Troi fan.
Okay, Deanna Troi. Who else were you saying? Sorry, I got excited.
Oh,
about that.
Becky from Roseanne.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, which Lacey Gornson, she's like my friend now, so it's like weird to say that. Sorry, buddy.
I think she's probably totally fine with it.
Right? She loves it.
Yeah.
She probably loves
it.
You love it.
Yeah, she loves it.
But yeah, I had a big crush
on
her.
Who hates being told, I have a crush on you, I thought you were the jam? Like,
right?
I just can't.
Oh, well, Janet, I have a crush on you. Oh,
Hamden knows.
What else? Let's see. Who else did I? The first person I ever like yoinked it to, but this wasn't in high school. This was like, oh, I started early. Like,
yeah,
was Jessica Rabbit from Roger Rabbit.
One of my recent guests ended up with Jessica Rabbit.
What?
A girl that I wouldn't have even thought would throw Jessica Rabbit into the mix ended up with Jessica Rabbit.
What
you could say Jessica Rabbit on my MASH game.
Oh, really?
That was an answer for who you end up with. And Jessica Rabbit
great.
Got it. And the nice thing is, these are all multiple alternate universes, so she could really get around.
Nice.
In a good way.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with that. I'm going to
start
with
cake.
That. Give me three. So we're going into MASH. Give me three people that you could either just be kind of for sexy times, or it can be like alternate universe companion. Three. And it could be characters like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like an actor or a whatever.
Okay. Okay. Three sexy time people. Let me think. That's like one of those questions. Like, what's your favorite you know, song.
I know. There's get so ready for a series of this, because that's all it's going to be, is you picking three of something that you have to pick up on the
once I get start. Once I get okay, all right, immediately. Okay, I'm gonna say. Can I still pick Deanna Troi?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I was trying to not pick the same things.
No. This is your game. You get to pick.
Okay, I'm gonna say Deanna Troi. Yeah, the character.
You don't have to give any answer that you think someone else would want you to say. You can say whatever you want.
Okay, I'm also gonna say Punky Brewster.
Amazing.
And I'm also going to say Left Eye Lopez.
Can I just say her little pert red lips?
Right.
What a tease.
I know.
Shout out to Punky.
Oh, Punky. and Lisa Left Eye Lopez.
Great. Great. Great, great, great. Okay. Okay,
now my juices are flowing.
Now you're warmed up. Let's do vacation homes, but let's do sort of mythical places. So mm-hmm, it's not mm-hmm. Greece, it's someplace from Harry Potter or anything like that. Just sort of alternate realms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a big tree house.
Yeah, great.
In a forest.
Great.
Yeah. Three, right? Okay. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. also a beach house on an island somewhere where there's like a lot of dolphins.
Okay, great. Dolphin Island. Great.
Dolphin Island. Okay. And then my third one is a cabin.
Okay.
In a wintry place with a
I like these because these are so vague that they could be in an alternate universe fantasy world, or they could just be somewhere here, but it's unnamed.
Yeah, like Narnia for the third one.
No. I actually really like that. Yeah. I really like that it's open to interpretation. Okay, next one is let's do. And by the way, this is not something that I save for trans. Switch bodies, live a day as three other people. See what it feels like.
Okay, I would live a day as one would be as RuPaul.
Amazing.
One would be as Rachel Ray.
Great.
I just want to know how to do all the things. So I want to have a cooking show, and one would be. Oh, who's that? What's his name? Red from Fraggle Rock? Red from Fraggle
it's
Rock.
It's Red, right? I was going to say, I don't know if I know a whole name, but
yeah.
Fraggle. I love the idea of being a Fraggle.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Check out the Doozers.
Check out the Doozers. God, they're so cute. All right. Next one is three skills that you wake up with tomorrow that you sort of downloaded Matrix style. Like, suddenly you're great. Something. It could be a superhero skill, but it could also just be like, you could fix any computer, or you can, you know what I mean? You know how to, whatever.
I could morph from female to male and back.
I mean, that seems like a good... I mean, I sort of wish I could do that.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great? I can make joints come out of my fingers.
I love it. I love it so much.
And I can make dollars come out of my sleeve.
Great, great. That one's good because it's almost just like you're a good magician. But yeah. In this case, it's real and spendable.
Anything green.
It's great. It's great. Okay. Next category is let's do fictional best friend, and it could be a character from something that's not real at all, or it could be someone who is real and alive, or it could be someone who was alive and is not alive any longer, but that's somebody that you could hang out with, just chill out with, that you love and respect, who also is like, loves you.
Okay, I would say my fictional best friend would be Sam from Clarissa Explains It All.
Amazing. I need two more.
Oh, right. Sorry about that.
No problem.
My other fictional best friend would be The Thing.
And which thing?
The Thing, the big rock guy.
Oh, The Thing.
Yeah.
My God, sorry. I was like, John Carpenter's The Thing?
Oh, no. No. Not that one. How does he laugh?
okay, great.
And the other one would be the character that John Wayne plays in all the spaghetti westerns.
Great. John Wayne cowboy.
But not John Wayne himself.
Yeah. John Wayne cowboy character.
Yep. Those would be my buddies.
Okay, great. Next category is, let's do three, like, you get to sort of alternate universe live your life, like, as if it's a movie directed by, in three. Like, a stylized version of your life. That would just be awesome. And safe. Like, I don't care if it's us, you know, everyone gets blown up. Like, in this world, it's safe.
Okay. But directed by?
Kind of. You know that style. It's like, oh, my David Lynch life. Or Quentin Tarantino life. Or
okay,
whatever.
I would have my Charlie Chaplin.
Nice.
One would have to be a musical.
Great.
A pop musical.
Great.
And the pop rock. And the other one would be a sexy thriller.
Ooh, I love it. God, I guess I want mine to be more. I didn't realize how much I wanted my life to be a sexy thriller until you just said that. And right? Now I realize that's what I want. 24/7. Okay. And then last category is three foods that have no negative physical ramifications on you in this world. In fact, are nutritious that you can have at the snap of your fingers. And it could be as specific as this one kind of cupcake you love, or it could be as general as, you know, pizza.
Okay. Oh, fuck. Pizza is a good one, but fuck. All right, I'm gonna say pizza.
So very good.
Does everybody say that?
It's very common, but I would say it. 100% say it.
Okay.
It's a perfect food,
right? Malasadas, which are a Filipino donut,
ooh,
which is amazing, and mac and cheese with hot dogs.
Oh, get the hot dog!
Yeah, that's my trailer trash side.
Yeah, I eat a lot of Stouffer's mac and cheese. That was my dad's
delicious
freezer brand of choice.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I had my parents were working, you know, so I was home alone a lot. So I had, like, every Stouffer's.
Your delicious microwave choices.
Oh, yeah.
Do you like the crispy cheese when it kind of gets burnt, or do you like the middle
the more
part?
Burnt, the better.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I still want texture. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to gum my food, so I still need some chew in there.
Yeah, yeah. Those burnt corners, you scrape them off. Ugh. I'll burn cheese in a pan and eat it.
I 100% will too.
Nice.
Listen, I'm not above heating up a pizza in the oven and then as some cheese drips down, scraping it with a spatula and just getting it right into my mouth as quickly as possible. Okay. all right. I'm going to do that little thing whereby I determine your answers. So you just tell me when to stop. Sooner than later.
Stop!
Okay. All right. I'm going to pause this.
I was pushing
This feels like maybe one of those times when I'm going to pee while I figure this out.
Okay.
And I'm going to come back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Okay. I'm stoked.
Very pleased. I feel very sure you will be too. Number one, listen. If you had anything but a shack in your treehouse forest kind of world, it would crash to the ground. So I want to reassure you that even though you got a shack, that's what you need to be in a treehouse, I think. Like, if you're in a mansion in a treehouse, you're not even, like, enjoying the trees.
Oh, yeah.
No. So that's the combination that you got, and I feel very comfortable with it.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Beautiful treehouse. Second, endless pizza.
Oh.
Endless pizza in that treehouse.
Thank God.
Endless pizza in that treehouse. The next thing, and this sort of works for me too, is that you get to experience being Red from Fraggle Rock, which also sort of fits in with all of this. Like, I like the idea of you being able to be under the ground, from all the way underground to all the, how do we like this? From all the way underground to all the way up into the trees. I have, like, a sweater snag here that is drastically affecting my ability as a podcaster. Okay. I just got hot. Ugh. Okay. Okay, so Fraggle Rock. Then keeping in line with the sort of fantastic creatures, your best friend, the Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which also, that makes sense. It's like, oh, he can just, like, scoop you and, like, toss you into your treehouse.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he won't be able to come up in it, though.
Yeah, I guess that's...
Yeah.
He's going to be nearby.
Sorry, Thing.
He can perch somewhere nearby.
Yeah, right.
I'll tell you one of the other reasons he loves you is that you can make joints come out of your fingers.
Oh, yeah.
That that's a win.
Oh yeah,
that's definitely a major win.
Yeah. That's how we met.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And this does not surprise me at all. The combination of your life being a sexy thriller starring you and Deanna Troi.
Oh, absolutely.
Pretty fucking awesome.
Star Trek, The Only Generation.
Well done. Well done. That, my friend, is your MASH future. I think you
I'm really happy with that.
In really good shape. Yeah. That's a lot of great stuff. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. I'm so happy. I'm glad to do an episode 2. There's no question about it. Please tell everyone where they can find you. Appreciate you. Tell us about your podcast with Judy, etc.
Oh, I have a podcast with Judy Gold called Kill Me Now, and that is on the Play It Network, but you can find it anywhere on Spotify, iTunes, whatever. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and all those good things at Hennessy Howley. That's Hennessy spelled like the cognac, HennessyHaole.
HaOle is how you write Howley. HaO.
That's right. Hennessy Howley.
Hennessy Holly on Twitter, and we are all sending our very best to Chemda. And if you
they could
continue to contribute, I'm sure, to medical fundraising kind of stuff if they wanted to.
I mean, yeah, I it's everything.
Anything
all your
helps.
Vibes, thoughts, dollars are all appreciated and have helped me be able to stay home, take care of her, and help us cover our hospital bills. And it's been a blessing.
That's fantastic. And guys, yeah, if like for, you know, because I don't really have, I don't like fundraise really or anything. If you enjoy this podcast and you've thought to yourself like, you know what, I'd pay for this podcast from time to time or whatever, or you feel like you want to put that towards Chemda, that would be very welcome as well. If you're like, hey, I love the JV Club, I'm going to send $20 to Hennessy and Chemda, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I would certainly applaud that very much. So thank you so much, and I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.